Chapter 134. Spot again, pressed it with his foot, to prevent its fluttering away, regained his seat in a single stride, and looked as vacant and unconscious as ever mortal looked. Arthur Gride, after peering nervously about him, spied it on the ground, picked it up, and sitting down to write, glanced at Newman Knox, who was staring at the wall with an intensity so remarkable that Arthur was quite alarmed. "Do you see anything particular, Mr. Knox?" said Arthur, trying to follow the direction of Newman's eyes, which was an impossibility, and a thing no man had ever done. "Only a cobweb," replied Newman. "Oh, is that all?" "No," said Newman. "There's a fly in it." "There are a good many cobwebs here," observed Arthur Gride. "So there are in our place," returned Newman, "and flies too." Newman appeared to derive great entertainment from this repartee, and to the great discomposure of Arthur Gride's nerves, produced a series of sharp cracks from his finger joints, resembling the noise of a distant discharge of small artillery. Arthur succeeded in finishing his reply to Ralph's note, nevertheless, and at length, handed it over to the eccentric messenger for delivery. "That's it, Mr. Knox," said Gride. Newman gave a nod, put it in his hat, and was shuffling away, when Gride, whose doting delight knew no bounds, beckoned him back again, and said, in a shrill whisper, and with a grin which puckered up his whole face, and almost obscured his eyes, will you take a little drop of something, just a taste? In good fellowship, if Arthur Gride had been capable of it, Newman would not have drunk with him one bubble of the richest wine that was ever made. But to see what he would be at, and to punish him as much as he could, he accepted the offer immediately. Arthur Gride, therefore, again applied himself to the press, and from a shelf laden with tall Flemish drinking glasses, and quaint bottles, some with necks like so many storks, and others with square Dutch-built bodies and short fat apoplectic throats, took down one moldy bottle of promising appearance, and two glasses of curiously small size. "You never tasted this," said Arthur. "It's Eau d'Or golden water. I like it on account of its name. It's a delicious name. Water of gold, golden water. Oh dear me, it seems quite a sin to drink it." As his courage appeared to be fast failing him, and he trifled with the stopper in a manner which threatened the dismissal of the bottle to its old place, Newman took up one of the little glasses, and clinked it, twice or thrice, against the bottle, as a gentle reminder that he had not been helped yet. With a deep sigh, Arthur Gride slowly filled it, though not to the brim, and then filled his own. Stop, don't drink it yet, he said, laying his hand on Newman's. "It was given to me 20 years ago, and when I take a little taste, which is very seldom, I like to think of it beforehand, and tease myself. We'll drink a toast. Shall we drink a toast, Mr. Knox?" said Newman, eyeing his little glass impatiently. "Look sharp. Bearer waits." "Why then, I'll tell you what," tittered Arthur, "we'll drink he. We'll drink a lady." "The ladies?" said Newman. No, Mr. Knox," replied Gride, arresting his hand, "a lady. You wonder to hear me say a lady. I know you do. Here's little Maidline. That's the toast, Mr. Knox. Little Maidline. Maidline. Said Newman, inwardly adding, "And God help her." The rapidity and unconcern with which Newman dismissed his portion of the golden water had a great effect upon the old man, who sat upright in his chair and gazed at him, open-mouthed, as if the sight had taken away his breath. Quite unmoved, however, Newman left him to sip his own at leisure, or to pour it back again into the bottle, if he chose, and departed. After greatly outraging the dignity of Peck Sladursky by brushing past her, in the passage, without a word of apology or recognition. Mr. Grite and his housekeeper, immediately on being left alone, resolved themselves into a committee of ways and means, and discussed the arrangements which should be made for the reception of the young bride. As they were, like some other committees, extremely dull and prolix in debate, this history may pursue the footsteps of Newman Noggs, thereby combining advantage with necessity. For it would have been necessary to do so under any circumstances, and necessity has no law, as all the world knows. You've been a long time, apostrophe said Ralph, when Newman returned. He was a long time, apostrophe replied Newman. Bah! Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Ralph impatiently. Give me his note, if he gave you one. His message, if he didn't. And don't go away. I want a word with you, sir. Apostrophe, Newman handed in the note, and looked very virtuous and innocent, while his employer broke the seal, and glanced his eye over it. He'll be sure to come, apostrophe muttered Ralph, as he tore it to pieces. Why, of course, I know he'll be sure to come. What need to say that? Knox. Pray, sir, what man was that, with whom I saw you in the street last night? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I don't know, apostrophe replied Newman. You had better refresh your memory, sir, apostrophe said Ralph, with a threatening look. I tell you, apostrophe returned Newman boldly, that I don't know. He came here twice, and asked for you. You were out. He came again. You packed him off, yourself. He gave the name of Brooker. Apostrophe, I know he did, apostrophe said Ralph. What then? Apostrophe, what then? Why, then he lurked about, and dogged me in the street. He follows me, night after night, and urges me to bring him face to face with you, as he says he has been once, and not long ago either. He wants to see you face to face, he says, and you will soon hear him out, he warrants. Apostrophe, and what say you to that? Apostrophe, apostrophe, inquired Ralph, looking keenly at his drudge. That it's no business of mine, and I won't. I told him he might catch you in the street, if that was all he wanted, but no. That wouldn't do. You wouldn't hear a word there, he said. He must have you alone in a room with the door locked, where he could speak without fear, and you'd soon change your tone, and hear him patiently. Apostrophe, an audacious dog. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Ralph muttered. That's all I know, apostrophe said Newman. I say again, I don't know what man he is. I don't believe he knows himself. You have seen him, perhaps you do. Apostrophe, I think I do, apostrophe replied Ralph. Well, apostrophe retorted Newman, sulkily, don't expect me to know him too, that's all. You'll ask me, next, why I never told you this before. What would you say, if I was to tell you all that people say of you? What do you call me when I sometimes do? Brute, ass. And snap at me like a dragon. Apostrophe, this was true enough, though the question which Newman anticipated, was, in fact, upon Ralph's lips at the moment. He is an idle ruffian, apostrophe said Ralph, a vagabond from beyond the sea, where he traveled for his crimes. A felon let loose to run his neck into the halter, a swindler, who has the audacity, to try his schemes on me who know him well. The next time he tampers with you, hand him over to the police, for attempting to extort money by lies and threats, do you hear? And leave the rest to me. He shall cool his heels in jail a little time, and I'll be bound he looks for other folks to fleece, when he comes out. You mind what I say, do you? Apostrophe, I hear, apostrophe said Newman. Do it then, apostrophe returned Ralph, and I'll reward you. Now, you may go. Apostrophe, Newman readily availed himself of the permission, and, shutting himself up in his little office, remained there, in very serious cogitation, all day. When he was released at night, he proceeded, with all the expedition he could use, to the city, and took up his old position behind the pump, to watch for Nicholas. for Newman Knox was proud in his way, and could not bear to appear as his friend before the brothers Cheeryble, in the shabby and degraded state to which he was reduced. He had not occupied this position many minutes, when he was rejoiced to see Nicholas approaching, and darted out from his ambuscade to meet him. Nicholas, on his part, was no less pleased to encounter his friend, whom he had not seen for some time, so their greeting was a warm one. "I was thinking of you, at that moment," apostrophe said Nicholas. "That's right," apostrophe rejoined Newman, "and I of you. I couldn't help coming up, tonight. I say, I think I am going to find out something." Apostrophe, "and what may that be?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, returned Nicholas, smiling at this odd communication. "I don't know what it may be, I don't know what it may not be," apostrophe said Newman. "It's some secret in which your uncle is concerned. But what, I've not yet been able to discover, although I have my strong suspicions. I'll not hint 'em now, in case you should be disappointed." Apostrophe, "I disappointed?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Nicholas. "Am I interested?" Apostrophe, "I think you are," apostrophe replied Newman. "I have a crotchet in my head that it must be so. I have found out a man who plainly knows more than he cares to tell at once. And he has already dropped such hints to me as puzzle me, I say, as puzzle me," apostrophe said Newman, scratching his red nose into a state of violent inflammation, and staring at Nicholas with all his might and main meanwhile. Admiring what could have wound his friend up to such a pitch of mystery, Nicholas endeavored, by a series of questions, to elucidate the cause, but in vain. Newman could not be drawn into any more explicit statement than a repetition of the perplexities he had already thrown out, and a confused oration, showing how it was necessary to use the utmost caution, how the lynx-eyed Ralph had already seen him in company with his unknown correspondent, and how he had baffled the said Ralph by extreme guardedness of manner and ingenuity of speech, having prepared himself for such a contingency from the first. Remembering his companion's propensity, of which his nose, indeed, perpetually warned all beholders like a beacon, Nicholas had drawn him into a sequestered tavern. Here, they fell to reviewing the origin and progress of their acquaintance, as men sometimes do, and tracing out the little events by which it was most strongly marked, came at last to Miss Cecilia Bobster. "And that reminds me," apostrophe said Newman, "that you never told me the young lady's real name." Apostrophe, Madeline. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Nicholas. Madeline. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Newman. "What Madeline?" "Her other name. Say her other name." Apostrophe, Bray, apostrophe, said Nicholas, in great astonishment. "It's the same." Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Newman. "Sad story. Can you stand idly by, and let that unnatural marriage take place without one attempt to save her?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, "what do you mean?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, exclaimed Nicholas, starting up. "Marriage? Are you mad? Apostrophe, apostrophe, are you? Is she? Are you blind, deaf, senseless, dead?" Apostrophe, said Newman. "Do you know that within one day, by means of your Uncle Ralph, she will be married to a man as bad as he, and worse, if worse there is? Do you know that, within one day, she will be sacrificed, as sure as you stand there alive, to a hoary wretch, a devil born and bred, and gray in devil's ways?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, "be careful what you say," apostrophe replied Nicholas. "For heaven's sake be careful. I am left here alone, and those who could stretch out a hand to rescue her are far away. What is it that you mean?" Apostrophe, "I never heard her name," apostrophe said Newman, choking with his energy. "Why didn't you tell me? How was I to know? We might, at least, have had some time to think." Apostrophe, apostrophe, "what is it that you mean?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Nicholas. It was not an easy task to arrive at this information, But, after a great quantity of extraordinary pantomime, which in no way assisted it, Nicholas, who was almost as wild as Newman Knox himself, forced the latter down upon his seat, and held him down until he began his tale. Rage, astonishment, indignation, and a storm of passions rushed through the listener's heart as the plot was laid bare. He no sooner understood it all than, with a face of ashy paleness, and trembling in every limb, he darted from the house. "Stop him!" cried Newman, bolting out in pursuit. "He'll be doing something desperate. He'll murder somebody. Hallo! There, stop him! Stop thief! Stop thief!" Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.